Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. So Trump in Tampa for a big rally. And Blacks for Trump were out in force with their placards. And their chants for Jim Acosta. This one goes out to you, Jim.
CNN sucks! CNN sucks! CNN sucks! CNN sucks! CNN sucks! CNN sucks!
Well, that's because it does.
No, it doesn't stink. I can't even say the S word. Come on. This is getting old. This is not good for anyone who works at CNN. It's not good for Jim Acosta. I think he needs security now.
No, sad. Let's remember, you're saying that when we're standing in a town.
Yeah.
Famous for Detroit sucks. Detroit sucks.
Detroit. Well, yeah, because, you know, we play the Tigers in the American League and the Sox do.
More like the Red Wings. Yeah.
Oh, then the Red
more
Wings.
More of a Blackhawks thing. But yeah. So if it's good enough for Blackhawks fans, is it not good enough for Trump voters?
312-642-5600, our turnkey .pro answer line. Lines opening early this morning. Help me out. No, I just, I'm worried about Jim's safety.
Oh, no. Of course, that's the preeminent concern.
I am.
No.
It gets worse. And then President Trump doesn't do anything to stop it. And then
his son, leave Eric, Jim alone.
Yeah, that guy in the corner, come on, back off. Aww. Eric Trump retweeted that, which we just played.
Yeah.
And then, or tweeted that out, and then President Trump retweeted it.
That's scandalous.
It is.
Yeah.
It's not good if you work at CNN. But, you know, that's what he does. That's his rallying cry. That's his.
Jim Acosta?
President Trump. That's the way to get the crowd going. And they're fun to watch.
I don't think he needs to get the crowd going. I think that was organic. I don't think Trump was leading the charge. I think he was just amplifying it on Twitter. So that's the interesting thing here about Trump and the media, since this is what dominates the rallies because the media is so self-regarding, is I find that Trump manipulates the media to his advantage, where most GOP politicians allow themselves to be manipulated to the advantage in furtherance of the agenda of the D.C. press corps. And that's the big difference. Let me give you an example of what I mean. Andrea Mitchell, taking your calls all morning. Andrea Mitchell, 40 years in journalism.
Oh, did they have a big party for her?
I'm sure they did.
Did somebody pop out of a cake?
Valerie Jarrett did. 40 years in journalism for Andrea Mitchell. Take your calls all morning. Your favorite memories of Andrea Mitchell's storied career in journalism. Favorite stories, favorite moments.
I thought you were going to tell me she passed away.
The marriage to Alan Greenspan, my favorite.
That was,
there's
no greater love than that.
What a darling couple.
She's all around the world. I don't even know if they see each other.
Yeah.
They're married.
He sits in his in front of the fireplace reading Ayn Rand. And she goes out and compares Trump to Stalin. Oh, you think I'm kidding? Andrea Mitchell.
Her career in review, or is this recent?
Andrea Mitchell, some highlights. I mean, there's so many to choose from. Andrea Mitchell on The Daily Show this week.
Oh, boy.
Which is another Joe featuring serious journalists, right? Trevor Noah, serious journalist.
Oh, he is very, yeah.
No,
he's a comedian.
No, he's a dope, is what he is.
He's labeled as a comedian, right?
Right. He's an aspiring comedian. He has to get funnier writers first. Andrea Mitchell. I'm going to give Andrea Mitchell and the D.C. press corps the latitude they would ever give somebody like me. I'm going to play everything she said in context.
Okay.
Not going to cherry pick. So here's her on Trump and the media and whether or not Trump is creating a violent environment for the media.
Do you feel that in some way Donald Trump is encouraging people to have a hateful relationship with the media?
I don't connect the president at all with what happened at the Capitol Gazette in Annapolis. That was a horror, and it was completely, you know, I would believe someone mentally deranged who went after that organization. So I don't think it's fair to blame him for that. But I do think that he has very deliberately set up the press as the enemy of the people. I don't feel that I am the enemy of the people, and it's not benign. I mean, this is a...
Yeah. Ooh-wee.
This is something that we first heard from Joseph Stalin. This is very dangerous. It undercuts democracy.
So he's not responsible for the shooting in Annapolis.
No.
But he is Joseph Stalin. That's the sort of even-handed, measured reporting that has punctuated Andrea Mitchell's storied, legendary career in journalism. And so here, to accentuate the difference that I was describing, provide some evidence in support of my case, put together a little video for Andrea. We love you, Andrea, featuring politicians from both sides of the aisle.
Well, she's interviewed every... every president, well, every currently living president.
Billie Jean King.
Yeah.
All the greats. Bobby Riggs, not available. Andrea Mitchell.
Andrea, you are such an inspiration to the whole NBC News family and to every single journalist who
made
shares
Hoda.
Your tireless pursuit of the truth.
Thank you for blazing the trail for us. Now, so many women in this business, we would not be anywhere without you.
I was a viewer for many years before we began working together, an admirer from afar of your work ethic, your persistence, and your commitment to the truth. You have been a role model for me and more people in this business than you probably will ever know.
Congratulations, Andrea, on 40 years at NBC News. Keep going for it. We need you now more than ever.
This milestone is a testament to your hard work and dedication. And I always enjoy speaking with you and look forward to more years of your professionalism and great reporting.
Bob Corker.
Oh, that real?
Colin Powell.
Yeah. Well, she was, I mean, back in the day, not a lot of women were journalists.
It's fascinating. That's not my point. The issue is how the GOP politicians most want adoration from the press and allow themselves to be manipulated in furtherance of the press's, D.C. press corps, left agenda, which it is.
Or it could be that they've had a relationship. Bob Corker and Andrea Mitchell.
Oh, that they've had a secret love affair?
Or maybe they're just friends.
With benefits? Perhaps.
I don't know what that means.
Perhaps. And whereas Trump, yes, he wants adoration too. Okay. But he is always advancing his agenda. And he'll manipulate the CNN apparatchiks like Acosta in advance of his agenda. And that's a big difference because it's the difference between somebody who's fighting and perhaps even by accident fighting for other people other than himself and the politicians who are only interested in their brand and yucking it up with the inside players. So as a means to sort of be temporarily, at least, the press's favorite Republican, just like John McCain was the D.C. press corps favorite Republican right up until he ran against Barack Obama. Right up until it was time to make a choice. Sorry, John, we have to do our job, which is to advance the left's agenda. The press will always advance their agenda.
But they came back to him after.
After we dispatched you, we'll come back. So we can use you as a battering ram against the Republican Party like we did prior to your run against Obama. That's the difference between Trump. He sees the press for the conniving, self-interested, self-styled, self-regarding hacks that most of them are. They're just political operatives, most of them. Whereas the GOP politicians who just want to be loved and reelected and get good ink, however fleeting, allow themselves to be used by those same leftists in the press. That's the difference, to me at least. Bruno in Naperville.
Yeah, so CNN does lie. CNN does actively skew the truth. And as a result, they distort our democratic process. So in a way, they sort of are an enemy of the people.
Well,
now,
so
as far as that thing with Jim Acosta goes, they weren't out there saying, kill Jim Acosta, kill Jim Acosta. So what's the big deal?
Bruno is obviously, those were obviously dog whistles. When you say CNN sucks, that is synonymous with saying, kill Jim Acosta. It's coded language.
Well, that's what I heard. You heard Yanni. I heard.
Yeah, right.
Whatever.
Thanks, Bruno. Ed in Oak Brook.
You know what? I have no love for the media, and especially this Acosta guy. They cause more problems in this country, race riots. You look at Ferguson. You look at Baltimore. You look at what happened in Florida. They're the ones that fueled all that damage. Did they ever go out and pay for the damage that they caused? I have no love for the media. They deserve everything that they get. Did they ever say anything to defend the ones that it was attacked? That Sarah Sanders or whoever press secretary is, they never say anything, but they say there's a war on women, except if the women are supporting Trump. Have a nice day.
Thanks, Ed.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer.
I can't believe we're doing this dog contest thing.
Yeah.
What are we doing?
So it's through MyPillow. Whoever gets the most votes wins a MyPillow pet bed, which is great because Punky loves her pet bed. But you have to go to 560theanswer.com/dog and submit a picture of your dog. And then people have to vote for who is the cutest dog online, and obviously Punky's going
to
win.
And then you win the pet bed, and you can give it to the Democrat politician of your choice for them.
So there's Hayek on there.
Are you kidding me? People are going to look at the dogs and say, like, which is the best looking dog?
Punky's going to win. I mean, there's no question. It's Punky, called the Dog Days of Summer.
Punky's a monstrosity.
Punky is so cute. Oh, I'm sorry.
Punky is the missing link of dogs, whereas Hayek is the Clark Gable of dogs. Are you kidding me?
You submitted a picture of Hayek with Hayek.
Yes.
In the background.
Well, that's...
I know, that's why.
His namesake, and that's his favorite economist.
Oh, look, so far, Dan Proft and Hayek have 0 votes.
Well, it just started. How many votes does Punky have?
Stand by.
None.
Click on Punky.
Punky has 1.
Oh, Amy's already started.
Wait,
that's exactly right.
The ballot stuffing.
Oh, Punky has 1 now.
Well, you're in the 45th ward. You know, no, you're not in the 45th ward.
I'm 47.
47th ward now. You know how to stuff ballots.
Yeah. Amaya Pawars are 1 vote.
Yeah.
going for the socialist vote.
Is he still running for governor?
I mean, remembering Amaya Pawars. Are you, seriously...
Your dog blends in with every. There's no difference between your dog and any other dog on so far.
Are you kidding me? My dog is a cosmonaut. My dog, Lika, the dog in Sputnik, was an Arubian Canuku, just like Hayek.
Sounds like a drink, like a Caribbean drink, Arubian Canuku.
You listeners, you go to the website.
Chloe's kind of cute.
Go
She's
to the
an
website.
Australian Shepherd. Go to 560theanswer.com/. Dog.
Yeah, you go. You look at Bunky versus Ike, and you tell me. I'll let you be the judge. I mean, this is not close.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. When you've got questions, he always has an answer. It's Sean Hannity this afternoon at 2, right before Joe Walsh at 5 on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. And so while President Trump was making his way to his, I guess, secondary home state of Florida for that rally in Tampa, on the Hill, the Senate Judiciary Committee was having a hearing on immigration policy, of course, specifically the family separation policy, because that allows senators to preen before the cameras and to get sound bites that they can feed to their socialist base in particular. Here's a kind of sort of a quality of an example of the quality of the discussion you get. The interest in detail that many senators have, interest in policy, ability to understand policy, their capacity, intellectual capacity. I introduce you again to Democrat Senator from Hawaii, Mazie Hirono. Oh. She had this exchange on U.S. immigration law with an ICE official who was testifying, Matthew Albence.
Yeah.
And here's how that went.
Mr. Albence, would you send your child to FRCs?
Again, I think we're missing the point.
Detention
These individuals
centers.
Are there because they have broken a law. There has to be a process.
They have broken a law only as deemed so by the president with his...
No, ma'am. They're there for violation of Title 8 of the immigration of the U.S. and Nationality Act. Okay, they're 8 U.S.C. 1325. That's illegal entry is both a criminal and civil violation. They are in those FRCs pending the outcome of that civil immigration process. They have broken the law.
Well, these are mainly, my understanding is that under zero tolerance, these are no longer civil proceedings, but in fact, were criminal proceedings.
They're both, they were criminal proceedings when the Border Patrol prosecuted them, but at the conclusion of that process, once the individual came into ICE custody, they would go through administrative proceedings.
I'm confused.
Okay.
The
criminal proceeding is an individual being prosecuted for the criminal violation of improper entry.
I'm confused. I don't know. Wait, we prosecute criminals in this country? Wait, what?
It's Trump's law? No,
slow down, Mr. Albence.
Did he ever, I mean, did she understand?
Who knows?
But Matt Albence went on to say, just ancillary issue, about what it's like being in these detention centers.
I think the best way to describe them is to be more like a summer camp. These individuals have access to 24/7 food and water. They have educational opportunities. They have recreational opportunities, both structured as well as unstructured.
Well, give us an example. Like, do they like archery?
Do they volunteer coaches that walk them through?
Do they have like canoe races in the lake? The summer camp analogy
might be a little stretch.
It's problematic to me. Because
we did have a 15-year-old girl escape, and she ran into an auto parts store and hid there, and said she doesn't want to go back. But that's one case.
Well, who didn't run
but
away?
But other
from
people.
Camp?
Exactly.
No.
Well, you always have some people that want to run away.
The summer camp metaphor is problematic. That should be discarded. But just going back to Hirono, you understand they're running around comparing these family residential centers, that's what the FRC stands for, to Auschwitz. They are comparing this administration, of course, to Hitler and Stalin and so on and so forth. They're concentration camp comparisons, internment of Japanese Americans comparisons. They don't even know what they're talking about. Mazie Hirono doesn't even understand what the hell is going on, what the process is, both criminal and civil, what the law is that ICE and border enforcement operates under.
Which doesn't understand the process.
Well,
Border Patrol and it's crime, and then you get turned over to ICE.
Well, so could we establish maybe common ground here? Because I know common ground
ask
is
a question,
very important.
I mean, when you were up there on the Senate Judiciary Committee, when you were having these meetings, can't you just sit that? If you don't understand what's going on, can't you just listen and learn? Do you have to embarrass yourself like that?
It wouldn't be much of a hearing if that were the threshold.
Well, if you're that clueless.
Common ground. Just an idea. Before you start labeling people Hitler and Stalin, know what you're talking about. If you could just get like sort of a baseline, a 101 level understanding of the issue you're going to discuss or the issue about which you're going to ask questions. I mean, it would make it so much greater, so much better for the American people, the American taxpayer, don't you think?
Yeah, she has to do her homework. She clearly didn't do that.
We got another, we got problems out in the hustings, too. It's not just in D.C. Obviously, we know that. We live here in Chicago. But in Philadelphia, Mayor Jim Kenney is being taken to task over his decision to end a data sharing program with ICE. Remember, Jim Kenney, mayor of Philadelphia. Here's some of Jim Kenney's highlights. Since we're doing retrospectives today, Andrea Mitchell, 40 years in journalism. Amaya Pawar, former gubernatorial candidate in Illinois.
It's too soon, Dan.
Jim Kenney, mayor of Philadelphia, back a couple months ago.
There's no one more disrespectful to this country than the president of the United States, which is a sad thing to say, but it's true. guy talks about being, he avoided the draft five times in Vietnam. If he wanted to be patriotic, he could have been patriotic back then, as opposed to this sham of an issue relative to the national anthem.
Yeah, I was talking about standing for the national anthem in the NFL. Jim Kenney was having none of it. Also, Jim Kenney has referred to Trump as a tyrant who's trying to turn America into a dictatorship. So, you know, the typical measured language you get from a left politician these days. So he's
refusing to hand over information.
Ending a data sharing program with ICE, yeah.
The mayor of Portland, Ted Wheeler, he's in some trouble because he emboldened the Abolish ICE protesters by ordering police to stand down and openly expressing support for their cause. So now the National ICE Council sent a cease and desist letter that demands that he make an apology and ensure the city's police will protect all citizens, including ICE members.
Yeah. So this against the backdrop of Trump.
A cease and desist letter.
This against the backdrop of Trump suggesting that he's willing to, you know, quote unquote, shut the government down if funding, at least a downstroke on funding for border wall construction, is not included in spending bills that are sent to his desk for signature. Will he do that or not is an open question. Republican leadership doesn't seem to be taking him too seriously on the topic, but that's a big issue. And it's an issue around which there's a lot of emotion precisely because of the antics of the Jim Kenneys of the world and the total absence of regard for the victims of illegal immigrant criminals in this country, for border security, national security, the rule of law, the total absence of regard on the left for all of those things. There's a lot of emotion behind this issue. This was sort of a central theme, I would, I think, fairly argue, of Trump's campaign. So if the Republicans in their first 2 years with control of the legislative and the executive branches don't move in the direction of border wall funding, I think that will have a depressive impact on turnout in November. I think that's a problem. I think Trump's correct to put a stake in the ground and to remind people that he hasn't forgotten about some of his central promises, consistent with some of the other promises that he's kept so far. But this is a big one. This is a big one. And again, on the spend side, when you get all these newfound fiscal conservatives that come out to oppose this very nominal amount of money in relative terms, you're talking about, what, 0.1% of the federal budget is what's being requested for border wall funding. 0.1% of the federal budget in advance of border security and in advance of the resources needed at the border for customs officers, border patrol, for example. This is going to be sort of a big moment, and it could be an inflection point for the midterm elections, how this turns out for Republicans. And, you know, Hemingway and others have observed there's a real disconnect between the GOP donor base and the GOP base. And, you know, I would suggest that Republicans be more concerned about the GOP base when it comes to this issue than the GOP donor base. At least if they want to maintain control of the House.
You've made the switch, and it feels so good. You've switched to Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. In the era of hashtag Me Too, is it okay to laugh at Animal House? Are you allowed to watch, will you allow your children, think of the children, to watch Animal House in your home, 312, when they're, you know, of age, 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro, text line. I say this against the backdrop of the latest high-profile Me Too case. This is Les Moonves, the head of CBS, who will not be charged with a crime. L.A. prosecutors announcing yesterday they're not moving on sex abuse charges against him, but obviously is still in an existential fight for his position at CBS amid an independent investigation into the allegations against him. These six women that have come forward and spoke to Ronan Farrow, who wrote it up in The New Yorker, detailing egregious conduct on behalf of Moonves.
And Moonves plans to speak during his company's earnings call tomorrow. Ooh. And his advisors are prepping him for possible questions regarding the sexual misconduct allegations. But he should have to answer the questions. I mean, what he allegedly did, grab one woman underneath her skirt and then forcibly kissed other women, one during a board meeting while other people were there.
That's odd.
It's so weird.
And obviously it's unacceptable. I mean, if what is alleged in the New Yorker piece by these women is true, and I assume it is, I'm certainly giving them the benefit of the doubt, especially with the response you got from Moonves, like the typical kind of, if in the past, many, many moons ago, I may have made some women feel uncomfortable. If I did, well, golly, I'm sorry for that, but nothing of what is alleged is true. Yeah, okay, that's sort of slow walking your admission before the fall. But if what they said is true, then he should be fired. He should be gone. I mean, I don't think that
some of these allegations are more than 20 years ago, but there's others that were made as recently as April 2017.
Is Julie Chen going to be on earnings call?
No.
Are you sure?
Yeah. I watched the talk again yesterday, and it's just weird that they're not talking about what everybody else is talking about. Your husband's bad behavior.
Well, she's already made the denial. She's made the definitive statement on it.
I stand by him. He's a great man, high moral character. He's a great father. Really? Because sometimes you really don't know who you're married to. 312-642-5600.
Here we go. I think we veered off into dangerous ground. We're kind of hanging on by our fingernails here.
But he was so.
What do you mean by that, Amy?
Charlie Rose too. When those 27 women came forward accusing Charlie Rose of bad behavior, he was the one leading the charge. This is not acceptable here at CBS.
No, not for Charlie Rose. For me, it's a different story. But going back, Ken,
sometimes you don't know who you're married to.
Please continue.
Well, sometimes they have side relationships. It's not just a sidebar. And then I know of one politician. I'm not going to say her name.
Jan Schakowsky.
Whose husband had an entire other family in another state that she never knew about.
Oh yeah, Preckwinkle.
No.
Yeah. Is it Zeus?
And then the Metro board. Remember the Metro board guy who threw himself in front of a tree?
Yeah, Phil Pagano.
He had another family.
Yeah,
in a different state.
No. No, so it was Northwest suburbs.
Oh well,
so it made the commute easier. I think it was like Palatine to Crystal Lake. So that's manageable.
Okay. Well, but how does that happen? I don't want to have kids with you. I don't want to be, but because I have another family with children, I have mouths to feed from another family. I mean, it's just weird to me that men could live a double life like that. There are some women out there that lead double lives.
There are family men, and then there are families men. but what about Animal House? Wonderful think piece from, I don't know, USA Today. Obviously, those two things don't go in the same sentence, think piece and USA Today. But that asked the question, is it okay to laugh at Animal House? Because like Andrea Mitchell, Animal House is celebrating its 40th anniversary.
Oh, stop it.
Animal House is 40, just as Andrea Mitchell has been in the news business for 40 years. Good. Is that a coincidence?
But there's so many movies that are politically incorrect that would never be shown in this day and age. I always think of Blazing Saddles.
Oh, I told you.
That would never be able. The sheriff is, are you kidding me? That one scene where they use the N-word, that would never be allowed in movie theater.
Cleavon Little would have no career today. And we'd all be better for it, I guess, with the left things. Actually, I don't think that. And I think it's a sad commentary that that's probably true. I've told this story before. I went to a screening of Blazing Saddles, where Mel Brooks
spoke
after the screening and did like an hour of storytelling. It was fantastic. a couple years ago, and that's the first question he said. That's the first question he got asked, and that's the first question he gets asked everywhere he goes. And he said no. So, I mean, so, you know, in the
context. He said no, that he wouldn't.
No, that he doesn't think it could get made.
Okay.
And so think about that. Think about, like, a brilliant comedic career like Mel Brooks, how much laughter he has brought to people with his movies, his work. And his career would have largely been redlined if it had started today.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
absurd.
He still could have done Spaceballs.
I don't know.
Politically incorrect.
I don't know. You had to remember Dark Helmet, the scene with the nurse.
Oh.
That's
right.
So.
But Animal House. Animal House. Why couldn't we see? I mean, you know.
4 decades later, writes Hannah Yasharoff, whoever that is. 4 decades later, it feels less like a comedy classic, more like a toxic showcase of racism, homophobia, and jokes about sexual assault. I mean, she's not kidding. Listen to this.
The issue here is not whether we broke a few rules or took a few liberties with our female party guests. We did. But you can't hold a whole fraternity responsible for the behavior of a few sick, perverted individuals.
I mean, that's...
Oh, my God.
That is so outrageous.
Wow.
That is a joke about sexual assault. It's a toxic showcase of masculinity. Is it okay to enjoy Animal House? These are questions that the left is seriously asking themselves. She writes, the movie wasn't meant to be taken seriously, but that's an issue in itself when it comes to toxic young male culture, Amy. Things found seriously offensive by some deemed just a joke, and those who find it hurtful are berated for not understanding comedy. Using sexual assault as a throwaway humor, perpetuates the idea that the destruction these people leave in their path is meaningless simply because they didn't intend to destroy it. I don't even understand what that sentence is trying to convey.
I just remember things from Animal House.
Nothing is over until we decide it is.
Of course.
Is that too aggressive?
It was not when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor.
You can do what you want to us. But we're not going to sit here and listen to you badmouth the United States of America.
There's a stark difference between commenting on a taboo topic in a funny way and using something terrible as the punchline for a character the audience is supposed to hate. A movie can be funny without suggesting a guy won't be accepted to a fraternity because he's Middle Eastern, or that the cute love story was actually statutory rape, or that the ultimate punishment for a male villain is sexual assault. You know what? Here's what I think we should do. We should turn over the censorship responsibilities for all pop culture, all art, to the cultural Marxists that lord over college campuses. You think it's cute when it's happening on a college campus or when they're targeting Trump. What if they're targeting movies and other art that you like? Is it still funny? Is it still cute? You want Hannah Yasharoff deciding what you can and can't see that meets her standard of funny? Reviewing scripts, all of the great Hollywood left. How about firing those scripts through Hannah Yasharoff? Hey, Judd Apatow. Hey, Seth Rogen. All the leftist comedic performers and directors of the day. You want to run all your stuff through Hannah Yasharoff and her ilk? Pretty, I mean, chilling. I think, you know, we can laugh at what they're obsessing about, but you want these people with real power? Just saying. In other news on the serious side of this.
Yes.
Jeannie Ives, state representative, has one suggestion for what should happen to Chicago Public Schools in the wake of the sexual assault report. We talked about the second installment of the series, the Tribune, investigative series the Tribune is doing on CPS. And this is students preying on other students, administrators mishandling it, if not ignoring it.
And 40% of the victims I have special needs.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking about.
So these should be the most vulnerable kids that should be protected in places like bathrooms and on field trips. And they weren't.
And graphic, serious sexual abuse of children, including special needs children, as you just said. Ives' proposal, at least as a start, is to break up CPS into smaller districts. CPS is too big, too corrupt, and too insulated to reform itself. It's one of two school districts that should actually be broken up into smaller districts because the bureaucracy is unaccountable. That's one thought. You know, you break it up a few different ways, regionally like you would, and, you know, geographically like you would in the suburbs, for example, or through competition, just allowing through things like the tax credit scholarship, families accessing the resources they need to make a different choice for their children so they're not discriminated against.
Right.
Based on their address and household income, forced to go to a neighborhood school, they wouldn't otherwise send their children if they had an option.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
All right, looks like we got another Me Too story breaking out of Springfield. State Representative Nick Sauer, who's a Republican from Lake County, the Barrington area, is the subject of a complaint filed by a former girlfriend with the Office of Legislative Inspector General. Oh, we got one of those now, finally. And so her complaint says, in pertinent part, Amy?
Well, she claims that Nick used a fake Instagram account and put nude photos of her on there to lure men into graphic discussions. So it's kind of a catfish. So other men would, you know, look at these naked photos of her. They'd think that they'd be talking to her, and they'd have conversations of a sexual nature. And she says that Nick shared private details about her life with these men.
She also filed a report with the Chicago Police Department and was told there's an active investigation into her claims. This is would fall under potentially revenge porn criminal conduct. Sauer declined to comment for this story that's written up by Shia Kapos in Politico.
He's seeking re-election for a second term. Should he
step
down? Should he not run? 312-642-5600. I mean, can he be that stupid that he, in this day and age, that he'd set up, that he'd have revenge porn for his girlfriend, who, by the way, moved here from California to be closer to him. They met on the dating app Tinder. And for 2 years, she dedicated her life to him because they had to break up because she found out that he had been dating another woman.
Did you just ask me if an Illinois legislator could be that stupid?
Yes.
I'm taking that as a rhetorical question.
She wrote in an email, "The man that I loved and honored for over 2 years, unfortunately, did not exist until I moved to Chicago to be closer to him. He and I would share very private photos with each other, as many couples do." No, not really. She said in an email, one has to comment about the complaint, referring to his alleged behavior as a betrayal that has sickened her.
Well, yeah, it's, I mean, if it's a criminal investigation, boy, which if she, what she's alleging is true, I could see why it would be. And the legislative inspector general on top of it, oh, boy.
She
another establishment Republican in jeopardy of departing through the window. Imagine that.
Kelly said Sauer reached out to her in June, so last month, 2 months ago, with a long apologetic email and sent her 3 dozen roses. And she realized that things wouldn't change, so they stopped talking again. And then she told him he needed to reimburse her for flights and hotels.
What about the flowers? I'm deducting the flowers from the reimbursement.
Sauer, according to Kelly, then transferred $2,000 into her bank account to pay the travel expenses she had incurred during their relationship.
So he was trying to kind of understood his exposure, pun intended, and was trying to cover it up after the fact.
She said, yeah, not long after that, she discovered the Instagram account that she alleges he created and put her naked pictures on.
So now you have motive. You're really piecing this together there, Perry Mason. You've got motive, right? So he was upset at how she reimbursed me and this and that. And so this was his way of taking vengeance on her after the fact, possibly.
3 dozen roses. Please. That's a little much. It's aggressive. I mean, if there are 3 dozen roses in here, I wouldn't be able to see your beautiful face. 3 dozen roses.
Well, you're more interested in the 2 grand. Keep the money coming.
Yeah. Well, you can transfer money into my account, Dan, anytime you'd like.
It's very generous.
Can't take it out,
but
you can put it in, okay? Thanks.
It's a poor choice of words.
That's what she said.
Mike on the north side.
Good morning, kids. Thanks for taking my call. Amy, you're going to have to help me out on this. I don't understand this whole Me Too movement. Let's see. When Bill Clinton was doing it, all the Hollywood types were supporting him. Now that they're being abused, now it's a crime. Mm-hmm. Back 10 years ago, when Mike Madigan's friend Robert Reed, a state rep, beat a woman who refused to have sex with him, all these liberal legislators thought he was a great guy. Didn't mind running on the same ticket as him. Now all of a sudden that somebody's grabbing them, hey, we got to do something about this. Are the only victims we care about members of the Democrat elite?
Well,
this is
no
Republican.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Mike. No, that's the fun part about this. I mean, I don't mean to minimize people who've been victimized, but the Me Too movement, in which, you know, I have mixed feelings about. Some of it is very positive, and other aspects are not positive at all. But in Illinois, Mike, it's doing for us what the Illinois electorate won't. It's changing how the political leadership in Springfield. You know, even Mike Madigan is not insulated from the Me Too movement. Look how close that has gotten to him. So
he's had to let go some of his closest allies and friends.
Yeah.
Aww,
yeah, it's sad. I mean, his majority leader there, Liu Lang. That's sad. Yeah, real sad. But no, seriously, the electorate won't hold politicians in this state accountable. But maybe women who've been wronged by men, or who knows, men who've been wronged by men. We've seen cases of those, too. We'll do that. Maybe it'll have to come at an interpersonal level, since we have no appetite to do it at a political level.
Well, yeah. There's,
I'll take it however I can get it. Oh, there's right. A poor choice of words.
Too. Yeah, please.
Yeah.
Also in the complaint, Kelly says that her employer helped her find out how long the fake account has been going on, and it's been almost 2 years. So then she, in her complaint.
2 years. So wait. So then this isn't in response to what happened over the summer. This has been going on for some time.
But she just found out about it.
I know, but my point is that if it was vengeance, you would think it was some break in the relationship or something that he did, or something that she did, I'm sorry, and then he does this to exact vengeance. Now you're saying it was going on for the entire time.
So this is what she writes in her complaint, that Sauer admitted that he's been doing this. Quote, he came to my house and confessed to catfishing men with my photo for 2 years to at least 8 different men. He was unable to provide the names, and he begged that I let it go, she wrote.
Uh-oh, well, he's in trouble.
Kelly contacted Instagram when they took down the account.
Why, let me get
why no charges against him?
Well, it's an investigation. She just filed a police report.
And get on it.
The Chicago police have nothing else to do. Revenge porn is mainly what the Chicago police do. Most of their cases, revenge porn. So here's the thing. I want to get your sense of this. As a woman. So, I'm sorry, someone who identifies as a woman.
Yeah, because I'm transitioning to Tom.
That's right.
Tom Jacobson. Yeah.
What's the creep factor on catfishing men with risque photos
of
your girlfriend?
It's pretty high. I mean,
it's weird.
It's false impersonation, really, or pretending to be someone you're not. They're,
and then he's communicating with
these
men in a graphic way about his,
yeah, and about what they want to do to her. And it's not her, it's him. This is gross.
Even if he didn't commit a crime, if he did that, he should resign.
Can't take it out, but you can put it in, okay? Thanks.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. See Sean Spicer in Chicago on August 8th. Tickets are absolutely free. Get yours at 560theanswer.com/briefing.
It's morning, Dan and Amy.
Who is this?
Oh, this is Alice in Chains.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, good stuff.
Alice in Chains?
Take it easy, Grandma. We'll explain later. Is this the Alice in Chains?
I just reminded myself of my mother.
Some kind of musical group?
Downloaded their music.
Well, when you graduate from the barbershop quartets, we'll introduce you to Alice in Chains. Let me introduce you. Speaking of musical artists, Jay-Z has produced a new documentary, Rest in Power, the Trayvon Martin story. You want to hear the trailer?
Oh, yeah, I'd love to.
So I need to file a missing person report for my son.
Hey, what's his name?
Trayvon Martin.
Stafford Police Department.
Hey, there's a real suspicious guy. These always get away.
There's someone trying.
How many more kids will we wait for them to kill? My tears collected like raindrops on a windowsill.
This kid was profiled, pursued, and shot in the heart.
George Zimmerman claimed self-defense,
standing his ground.
It just polarized the country.
We were overcome with fear and anger.
Trayvon became the face of our community. We had to go to war for him.
Rest in power. Rest in paradise. To all the babies too young to have had to pay the price.
You choose to grieve or to fight.
It took my son being shot down to make me stand up.
Rest in power. Rest in paradise. You have become a symbol in the spirit life.
So, in case you haven't figured that out from the trailer, this will be the beatification of Trayvon Martin.
Mm-hmm. Is it coming out in movie theaters or on Netflix or made for TV movie?
Check your local listings.
Okay.
I want
to see it.
Mm-hmm. Reportedly, so it's being marketed, taking aim at the myth of a post-racial America. Well, I thought it was Barack Obama who said there's no red, there's no blue, there's no black, there's no white, it's just America.
And he also said, too, if he had a son, it would be Trayvon Martin.
Yeah,
it would look like Trayvon Martin.
When he became president, of course, then he was just another race hustler. Post-racial America. I don't even know what people mean by that.
What does that mean?
I guess it means where there's not racism.
Okay.
Because we're always going to have people of different races, and that's all well and good. I guess it's just how we decide to organize society. Are we going to be race obsessed as we are and have been for some time? Finally have that conversation about race. We need to stop putting it off. Or are we going to chart a different course with how we think about one another, interact with one another, the laws that govern those interactions? Or are we going to be in the business of the government conferring benefits or assigning burdens based on race, which is what the left wants to do?
How did you feel about the Trayvon Martin shooting?
I mean,
at the time, do you remember? Did your opinion change over, during the course of the trial?
With respect to the trial, look, George Zimmerman is no hero. No. Here's the thing. It's possible to have two bad people or two people who made terrible mistakes, to be generous, involved in an altercation. You don't have to pick a side. You don't have to say it's either George Zimmerman did a wonderful thing or Trayvon Martin was victimized. You can say it was something that should have never escalated to where it did. Trayvon Martin shouldn't have bum-rushed him. He shouldn't have been playing vigilante cop. And then
the stand your ground law in Florida pretty much exonerated him.
Well,
I think.
Well, yes, the stand your ground law is the basis for his acquittal. But remember, based on the evidence and the law, you had jurors on the Trayvon Martin case in tears saying, I wanted to vote to convict him, but I couldn't because the evidence and the law didn't support a conviction. And that's, of course, lost in the conversation as well. So you want to have a discussion about stand your ground law, we can have that discussion. But just remember some of the facts in this case. Also, because this has been treated as like all kinds of things, an instance of white supremacy, even though what Zimmerman's like half Latino or something. Yeah. White Hispanic is how he was described, because you got to get the white in. The white's the bad part. The Hispanic's the good part. We don't call Barack Obama black white. We call him black.
Right. Mom's
a white. So whatever.
Black Lives Matter movement.
Well, but it also is treated like a cop killing.
Right. Of course, this guy was a trigger happy neighborhood watch leader.
And of course, some of George Zimmerman's exploits since also don't. You wouldn't characterize him as a particularly redeemable or figure that's worthy of defense.
And just so you know, it's premiering tonight on BET.
Okay. But here's the thing about this in the context of police shootings, because we're talking about that in Chicago now, and the big new Chicago police reform that Tiny Dancer and Fivehead, Attorney General Fivehead, rolled out.
Attorney General Fivehead?
Yeah. That's not a forehead she's got. That's not Fivehead. It's too big for a forehead.
So she could get bangs. It would help.
That reform plan that includes making sure Chicago police address individuals by their gender identity. It's key, certainly, to stop police shootings, much less violence in the streets. But since Tiny Dancer has been in office, round numbers, and I hate to be cavalier about this and treat human beings as just a statistic, but you have to give some order of magnitude, around 5,000 murdered, 20,000 shot. How many of those are police-involved shootings? How many of those
15,
are...
right?
Well, that's just this year. Yeah. How many of those are bad police... were bad shoots?
Yeah, or unjustified police...
Yeah, bad shoots. Yeah. Right. So how many? Thinking of that, this in terms of the rank order priority of what AL Chicago. And then... this case out of Colorado is an interesting one and a tragic one. Aurora, Colorado, man fending off an attacker inside his home was shot by police who arrived at the scene. He was a decorated Vietnam vet. Police arrived at the scene. It was chaotic, violent. Officers heard gunshots from inside the home. They encountered an armed man. When they entered the home, they shot him and killed him. That was the homeowner defending himself who had shot the intruder. So it was a case of mistaken identity by police, and a tragic one.
It's awful.
So, this was a mistake by a police officer. I'm not talking about the race here.
It's a deadly mistake. Take it back.
I'm not talking about something systemic in the Aurora, Colorado Police Department. They weren't hunting for decorated Vietnam veterans. Perhaps there was a procedure not followed, and there should be civil, probably not criminal, but civil action taken against the police officer and professional action taken to him. Perhaps. I don't know. We don't have enough facts here. But those sorts of interactions, like you've seen on the streets with Chicago police officers in other cities, they do happen. To respond by lionizing Trayvon Martin, to respond with these phony baloney consent decrees that declare 12,000 Chicago police officers, half of whom are minorities, as white supremacists, basically, is absurd. Absurd. But that's what the left is doing. And that's what the left politicians who are beholden to them are doing. Lewis in Dayton, Texas, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, Dan Name. How you guys doing this morning? I think with this documentary coming out, supposedly, Jay-Z, he knows exactly what he's doing. I don't think this is to kind of get truth out and to kind of explain stuff of the trial. I think what he's planning on doing with this is kind of inciting more anger and racial tension and violence, and I think that's exactly what it's going to do. Just in society and where we live today, stuff like this is going to incite and anger people and get people more riled up over this. And he's a smart man. You know, he knows what he's doing. He knows that this is going to incite anger and violence and more racial tension. So I just think this documentary and stuff like this is a bad idea. And just on a quick note, you know, I saw a video on Facebook. Yeah, I saw a video on Facebook. It was a blonde-haired white boy and a young black boy. And they were at the barber shop, and they were getting the same haircuts. And their mothers were saying it was because they wanted to get the same haircut because they didn't want the teacher to tell them apart. And they had big smiles on their face holding each other. And, you know, it would, what that shows me and should tell a lot of people is, you know, if you look at these two children, you know, they don't see color. They don't see the issue. A lot of this stuff is taught by the parents and even society and TV. You know, they teach the racial, you know, division between, you know, races and religions and stuff like that. If you can see these two kids in the way they were loving each other and best of friends, you know, and their intentions, it just amazes me the why we can't be the same way. Why we can't look through those children's eyes and have the same views as them.
Thank you, Lewis. It's almost called for a little bit of ebony and ivory.
Yeah.
Living together.
Together in perfect harmony.
Side by side on the keyboard.
Keep on playing something.
What?
Oh, Lord, why don't we?
Side by side on the keyboard. Oh, Lord, why can't we? Yeah. Live together in perfect harmony. Yeah. Side by side. Yeah. Bruce in Bloomingdale.
How you doing, guys? Yeah. I caught something. Two things. First off, as my grandfather used to say, there was plenty of stupid to go around that night.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
You know, when he says Trayvon Martin is the face of our community, you know, and when the mechanic opens your hood and says, I think I see the problem, I think I see the problem.
Thanks for the call, Bruce. Bill in Glen Ellen.
Hello?
Hi, Bill.
You mentioned that at Stand Your Ground was the defense and Trayvon Martin shooting.
No, Stand Your Ground Stand Your Ground was the law. They asserted self-defense, that's right.
But Stand Your Ground wasn't what the defense used because he was on the ground when he fired, so there was no ability to retreat, which is one of the elements of Stand Your Ground.
Right. No, I understand. Thanks for the call, Bill. It's a fair point. The defense in the Zimmerman case did not assert a stand your ground. They didn't. They asserted a self defense. It was a self defense case, but it obviously brought into the discussion Florida's stand your ground law, just as this recent shooting at a convenience store has. Candace and DuPage.
Good morning, Amy and Dan. Okay, I think this is like Eric Holder, Obama-izing, going back, and they're going to keep doing this, the left. I saw that it was going to be on the Paramount Channel, this documentary, and I just rolled my eyes because I'm like, they're just trying to try to Ferguson, like all this old stuff that they didn't like how it turned out. And because there are so many people walking away from the Democratic Party, you know, they're trying to gem up the base to vote in the midterms, and that's all I think this is.
Well, yeah. Thanks for the call, Candace. I mean, I just don't understand why you can't distinguish between a Michael Brown or a Trayvon Martin and somebody that was an actual victim, like, say, Walter Scott in South Carolina. In addition to the...
Or Eric Gardner in New York.
I think that's a more complicated case, but you can make an argument. But then you also, but also too, I mean, all of the, every weekend in Chicago, all of the kids, all young black men mainly. And what about memorializing, lionizing them? I mean, I still think about Ben Wilson from 35 years ago, the Simeon basketball star. Why don't we remember the talent that was lost through the senseless violence on the streets of places like Chicago? Maybe, to me, that seems like a much more productive discussion. It's a unifying one, and it also is an evidence-based one. Trayvon Martin is not Ben Wilson. Michael Brown is not Ben Wilson or Hadiya Pendleton. or pick your victim out of the thousands that get selected to be amplified by the press corps as an exemplar of violence, whether it's cops doing bad, and there are certainly cases of that, of course, or the more frequent everyday occurrence of people doing bad to other people in the streets.
Listen to podcast of Dan and Amy from the AM 560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
That was Blacks for Trump, according to their placards, leading the chants in Jim Acosta's direction in Tampa Bay last night, a big Trump rally.
And, of course, I'm concerned this morning for Jim Acosta's safety.
Well, that makes one of us. Donald Trump.
Trump retweeted what his son Eric tweeted that out, and President Trump retweeted it. It's just he didn't do anything
goodness.
To stop it.
Well, why should he stop it?
Because I'm worried about his safety.
Yeah, I know. It's scary times. Jim Acosta is a national treasure that needs to be protected. CNN sucks. That is not synonymous with let's go beat up Jim Acosta. I know the D.C. press
that's
corps
what
thinks
I heard,
so.
Though.
I know that's what they think. But it's just not. Andrea Mitchell, though, is also concerned about... Well, not just Jim Acosta, but all of us, because she's Andrea Mitchell.
And she's celebrating, by the way, 40 years in the business. Or she has been celebrated for her 40 years.
40 years, journalism for Andrea Mitchell. Animal House turns 40 this week. I'm not going to comment upon which has better stood the test of time. I won't do it. But Andrea Mitchell is going to comment about the climate that Trump is engendering as it pertains to violence against media types. This in a probing, thoughtful interview on The Daily Show.
Do you feel that in some way Donald Trump is encouraging people to have a hateful relationship with the media?
I don't connect the president at all with what happened at the Capitol, at the Capitol Gazette in Annapolis. That was a horror, and it was completely, you know, I would believe someone mentally deranged who went after that organization. So I don't think it's fair to right. blame him for that. But I do think that he has very deliberately set up the press as the enemy of the people. I don't feel that I am the enemy of the people, and it's not benign. I mean, this is a...
Yeah. Clap, seals, clap.
This is something that we first heard from Joseph Stalin. This is very dangerous. It undercuts democracy.
So, Andrea Mitchell, in her measured, temperate manner, provided the perfect balance that she's done for four decades, Amy. On the one hand, hey, no. Trump is not responsible for the journalist murder in Annapolis. On the other hand, he's Joseph Stalin. For more on this, we're pleased to be joined again by Roger Kimball, who's the editor of the New Criterion and also a columnist for PJ Media and American Greatness. By the way, New Criterion, if you want to get away from just politics, they have political discourse, but the cultural offerings at New Criterion are excellent. You wouldn't think that I'm interested in culture by doing Seal impersonations, but I actually am. And there's actually a great review of one of my favorite operas, Verdi's Falstaff, A Night Plays a Night, in the most recent issue of New Criterion. So for cultural offerings, I encourage you to check out New Criterion. Roger Kimball, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, it's great to be with you guys again. How are you?
So, do you think that Trump is using Stalinist tactics with respect to the media, and we should be providing more of a security detail for the folks over at CNN like Jim Acosta?
Absolutely. I mean, I live in Connecticut, and I can see from my window here a gulag in which they're planning to put Jim Acosta and Andrea Mitchell and the rest of that friendly fraternity. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. It's not even. If it didn't get so much traction because of this strange echo chamber that is created by ceaseless repetition, you would just laugh at it. But unfortunately, it's minatory as well as risible, because this is where many people, alas, get their news. And so what it really has poisoned the well of our public discourse. And I notice that a lot of journalists are very exercised at Donald Trump's description of the media as the enemy of the people. But look at what they say about the president and people who work for him, who support him. I mean, what would you call someone who actually goes to a restaurant and harasses one of Donald Trump's employees? Why? Because he or she is Donald Trump's employee. And as far as violence goes, I mean, I think Steve Scalise is unavailable for comment at the moment.
But do you think, I mean, he's taking it too far, because he didn't say to stop it. And then President Trump retweeted what his son had tweeted out that moment with Jim Acosta.
Yeah, so what is the question again?
Well,
do I think that that Donald Trump has taken it too far?
Yeah.
No, I don't, frankly, because I think that the one of the distinguishing features of Donald Trump's rhetoric, that is to say, what distinguishes how he operates from previous presidents, especially previous Republican presidents, is that he actually responds to these assaults. Notice that Donald Trump, as far as I can remember, never initiates the aggressive rhetoric. He only responds to it. It's, you know, if somebody says, you're a racist, you're a xenophobe, you're a bigot, you're a sexist, he doesn't roll up into a little ball and go into the corner and start whimpering the way many previous Republicans do.
Yeah.
Who want nothing except to keep the status quo. They just want to kind of sail on and make sure everybody is calm. Donald Trump doesn't do that, because he has a very aggressive agenda that he wants to pursue. And he understands that the object of these attacks by the media, by protesters funded in many cases by people like George Soros or Tom Steyer, their goal is to delegitimize and ultimately to destroy his presidency. So I think that his rhetoric is eminently justified.
You had a good piece at American Greatness, amgreatness.com, about Hillsdale College and Hillsdale mm-hmm. College being targeted by Connor Friedersdorf over at The Atlantic for the high crime and or misdemeanor of inviting Mike Pence to address the commencement. I thought it's a great example of what we're talking about culturally. It's not as salacious as Sarah Huckabee Sanders being accosted at a restaurant, but it's of the same kind.
Yeah. Well, I thought that was a disgusting piece for this reason. It was clothed in a kind of nimbus of high purpose and deep concern. Long, long quotations from various anti-Trump pundits, and long quotations from an interview between Hillsdale's President Larry Arnn and Hugh Hewitt. And the idea is, oh my gosh, do you think that Hillsdale is selling its soul to gain worldly good? I mean, after all, they invited the Vice President of the United States to give its commencement address. Can you believe it? That's horrible. I mean, he says, Mike Pence talked about principles and values and truth in his commencement address, but everyone knows that Donald Trump is not a moral man. Isn't there a contradiction here? I'd like to hear from students and alumni and faculty who agree with me. I noted that he didn't quote any of these people, although some have subsequently come forward, as one would expect. Whenever you get an invitation to deliver dirt, there's always going to be some people who will do that. But all you have to do to discredit this piece is substitute the names of Joe Biden or Hillary Clinton or Bill Clinton. I mean, the idea that there's something uniquely morally tainted about Donald Trump or his vice president or people who work for him is preposterous. And, you know, it was a piece intended to do real damage to a institution that is well nigh unique on the American educational landscape. Here is an institution that conspicuously, deliberately, ostentatiously is trying to live up to the vision of this country enunciated by the founders. That is to say, liberty, ordered liberty, a concern for the Western humanistic tradition. They take not a cent of government money, which means that they are totally or almost totally emancipated from the smothering network of government regulation that has turned many, if not most, of our institutions of higher education into kind of consciousness-raising camps for social justice warriors. There's no Title IX on Hillsdale. There's, you know, there's no demand for safe spaces or freedom from microaggressions or triggering or any of that. It's just a small group of students who are pursuing a traditional humanistic education with an eye on you know, what makes this country great. And
well,
by the way,
yeah,
you know, they don't there's no apology for the fact that this is a great country and that the founding principles are things that are worthy to emulate and transmit to succeeding generations.
Well, in addition to that, not just the founding principles, the principles of Hillsdale's founders, who are abolitionists. Hillsdale, I think, has like the highest per capita of students who served and died fighting in the Civil War to abolish slavery. So that says something about the institution's founding in addition to their commitment to the nation's founding principles. And, you know, it's also a sort of a commentary or an opportunity for a commentary on the state of higher education. Hillsdale College is one of the few campuses Mike Pence could even speak on.
Yes, that's quite right. So it's, you see, this is something that has been impressed upon me over and over again. Over the years, that you know, the entire institution of higher education in this country is captive by the identity politics of the left. So here you have one little oasis, and they can't stand that. Oh my gosh, there's a college somewhere in the middle of the country with 1,400 students that does things differently from the way our masters in Washington tell us we have to do things. We have to stamp it out. I mean, I've had that experience at the New Criterion often. I mean, we're a small magazine, you know, about 8,000, a circulation of about 8,000 people. But it's when we used to report on things like the Modern Language Association meetings, we gave that up several years ago now, they would go into a swivet. You know, the left had all the universities, you know, give or take one or two. They had the Modern Language Association, they had the media and so on, but it was intolerable to them that there should be this one voice out there criticizing them. And so you see the same thing with that despicable piece in the Atlantic magazine.
He is Roger Kimball, editor of the New Criterion and also columnist for PJ Media. You can also catch his work at amgreatness.com. Roger, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Great fun. Thanks, guys.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
So just picking up on our discussion of Trump in Tampa Bay last night, Ron DeSantis, who's a Republican congressman in Florida, was there with Trump. He's Trump's endorsed candidate for governor in a competitive Republican primary against Adam Putnam, who's our statewide ag commissioner in Florida. Mm-hmm. And Putnam has been, this has been a run-up for years for Adam Putnam to replace Rick Scott as the governor. And basically, DeSantis has taken the lead now, sort of buoyed by Trump's support. So it's really an interesting race and sort of a bit of a microcosm about what's going on in the Republican Party nationally. DeSantis, think about what he's doing down there. This is statewide compared to what you see Republicans doing up here, generally speaking. Ron DeSantis' recent ad, full embrace of President Trump with his wife narrating.
Everyone knows my husband, Ron DeSantis, is endorsed by President Trump, but he's also an amazing dad. Ron loves playing with the kids.
Build the wall.
He reads stories.
Then Mr. Trump said, "You're fired." I love that part.
He's teaching Madison to talk.
Make America great again.
People say Ron's all Trump, but he is so much more.
Big league. So good.
I just thought you should know.
Ron DeSantis for governor.
That is awesome. And later in the show, we're going to have Pritzker's new ad where he makes out with a puppy.
Exactly.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
If you're talking about it, I'll be talking about it. Dennis Prager here. Join me this morning at 11, right here on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Trump in Tampa last night saying he's kept his promises, even some of the ones maybe, if you're like me, you wish he hadn't.
In the past, politicians ran for office pledging to crack down on unfair trade. They never did anything about it, only to get elected, and they just didn't do anything. The United States was allowed to truly get ripped off. But we're not going to let that happen. I'm not like other politicians. You've seen what happens. I've kept my promises.
Kept his promises, says President Trump.
And he also talked about China tariffs and that they're going to go up, that more is waiting in the wings.
China had others, remember this, have targeted our farmers. Not good. Not nice. And you know what our farmers are saying? It's okay. We can take it. These are incredible people. We can take it. Now we're going to open up markets. We're going to do it the way it should be. And all of this stuff, you're going to make it back, and it's going to be made back faster than anybody would know. But we haven't been treated right.
We're going to be made back faster than anybody would know. That fast, huh? The second part of that about opening markets, that's good. They can take it. Well, you're sure they can take it when you offer $12 billion in subsidies for them to take it. That certainly softens the blow. For more on this topic, we're joined by CNN chief economist, Wall Street Journal columnist, Stephen Moore. Steve, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hi, guys. Good morning.
Morning. So here's the thing about Trump and what he doesn't seem to understand about trade and trade deficits, just for an example. And this is why his approach is still a bit concerning to me, even with the GDP number, even with Larry Kudlow on deck. So just one point of order. Since 1972, which is when the U.S. started running significant trade deficits, trade deficits have accompanied higher employment. So the idea that increasing trade deficits cost jobs, the exact opposite has been true for nearly the last 50 years. So can you convey this to him to get him off this trade deficit rap that he doesn't understand?
Well, I'll give you an A in economics today. You're exactly right. In fact, I've shown Donald Trump a chart that shows that when unemployment is high, the trade deficit goes down, and when the unemployment is low, the trade deficit goes up. So we are seeing, that you're right about that. Now, I used to joke to Donald Trump, you know, that, hey, if you want to get rid of the trade deficit, let's have a good long recession. That'll get rid of the trade deficit. But look, the big story is that what happened last Wednesday with the subsequent to when we talked last Wednesday morning, Trump got an important concession from the Europeans on trade, where the story here is Trump threatened the Europeans with 20% auto tariffs. That's something Germany cannot live with. Germany sends a lot of cars over here, and they came hat in hand to the White House. Trump got a deal with them where they're going to lower some of their tariffs, and most importantly, Dan, I think I mentioned this to you last week, the goal of the both sides on the sides of the Atlantic said, we want to move to zero tariffs. a level playing field. That's what Trump has always said. I want a level playing field, but I want, you know, if we're going to lower our tariffs, the other countries have to as well. So that makes a lot of sense to me. In fact, there is a piece in the New York Times today. I know you didn't read it because you don't read the New York Times.
No, I do read the New York Times.
Steve Forbes and I and our laugher basically said, let's move to zero tariffs as a strategy. In other words, instead of escalating the tariffs, let's, you know, in other words, use the stick of, you know, threatening these countries with higher tariffs. But the ultimate goal is to get the tariffs down to zero. And I'm going to say to you and Amy, I think that this strategy is working.
Well, one indication that it's working will be as if what Larry Kudlow said over the weekend comes to pass in the not too distant future, which is the framework of an agreement that the president got with the EU that you're describing actually translates into a specific transactions on ag products or energy.
That's right. That's right. So, you know, this is a great point that you're making and that Larry made is, you know, it's one thing to have a handshake deal with these, other countries that they're going to agree to do A, B, and C. But, you know, I'm an old Reaganite. You know what Reagan say? Trust but verify. So, you know, it's one thing for them to say they're going to do it. It's another for them to do it. But at least we've now got them to, in print to say that they're going to do it. And they're on record of saying they're going to do it. Now, one reason I think this strategy makes a lot of sense and why I think Trump is going to win, and ultimately I do think Trump is going to win, is because now he can, if he can get this done with Europe, if he can get it done with Mexico, by the way, we're making great progress now with Mexico of all countries. They just, as you know, they elected a socialist leader, but now socialist leader wants to do is get a free trade agreement with the United States because he's not stupid. He knows that the Mexican economy can't grow without access to United States markets. Canada is a little bit of a problem, but I think we're going to get something done with Trudeau. And then what you do is you isolate China. And, you know, you guys know I'm a hardliner when it comes to China. I'm all on board. We should be very punitive with China. China is a big, big bad actor on the world economy. And, you know, some people, you may guys might disagree with me on this, but I think this allows the whole world to point their finger at China and say, stop cheating, stop stealing, play by the rules.
And part of that game is to say, I mean, last night he said he's going to raise tariffs for Chinese goods from 10 to 25%.
Yep.
Is that just barking or is that really going to happen?
Where am I going to get my knockoff handbags?
Amy, everything with Donald Trump is always about negotiating, right? I mean, this guy is everything he said on trade from the first moment he started running for president has been about staking out a position to get other countries to make concessions. And look, here's the story that has not been well told, but I think it's an important story. There's a great piece in the Wall Street Journal by, do you know Don Luskin? He's a very strong economist. And he made the point, nobody in the media is reporting what's happening in China now. China is in a total panic over these proposed and threatened tariffs. The Chinese stock market, how many people know that the Chinese stock market is down 20% this year?
Yeah.
They're having to close down factories because they don't have enough orders because they're not selling as much stuff to the United States. This is a big deal for China. And I am going to predict to you, I think I said this last week, I believe that China's going to come hand in hand before the end of the year, and they are going to agree to some major, major concessions in the United States, and Trump is going
to
win.
Well, we talked to Rick Santelli about this yesterday, and he was making a similar point, actually. And there was a piece in the South China Morning Post about an assessment of Beijing and how Beijing misunderstood Trump. They thought this was more just kind of American saber rattling. They're sort of in this cocoon, you know, as Communist Party apparatchiks will be. And they didn't really appreciate kind of who they were dealing with and what his real posture was with respect to trade and China. And so they're sort of back on their.
So let me make a point about this, because I think it's a very important point. You know, my hero is Ronald Reagan. I believe he belongs on Mount Rushmore. And I think he was such an effective president, both from a foreign policy and an economic standpoint. But one of the things that Ronald Reagan, you guys may be too young to remember this, but his first year in office, in his first months in office, he faced a strike from air traffic controllers, and he fired the air traffic controllers, which nobody thought any president would ever do something like that. He just said, this is an illegal strike. You're all fired. And, oh, my God, it was seen as the most radical. By the way, everything worked out perfect. It broke the back of the radical public employee unions. It was an incredibly important thing. But one of the reasons I mentioned that is that sent a signal to the Soviets, to all the people who were negotiating with around the country. This guy means business. And you know what? He's kind of crazy. He might do some crazy things, so you better make a deal with him. I think that's the way the Chinese now view Trump. This guy's kind of crazy. We better get a deal with him, or he's going to really drop this bomb of, you know, 25% tariffs. Now, is he going to do it? Hopefully not. Probably not. But he's got that hanging over their head, and I think that's going to lead them. I really do. I think that's going to lead them to make some major concessions.
There's another pressing issue for Trump and Republicans. It's funding for border security, funding for the wall.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, we talked about this before, the disconnect between the GOP donor class and the GOP base. You speak to the donor class all the time. They need, I think, my opinion, they need to get hep to where the base is on this issue, and Republicans need to put a down payment on that border, that border wall. If you want the turnout, you need to control the House in November.
I kind of agree with that. Look, I'm very pro-immigration, but I've come around to believing that you're not going to get anything done in terms of real immigration reform until we get that wall built and people feel that the border is secure. And it's just so interesting to me. I've got to say that, you know, I've been in this town a long time, 35-some years. I've never seen the Democrats not want to fund something. the only thing I've ever seen them not want to fund is this wall. And you know, look, the Democrats' position on immigration is crazy. They want to get rid of, fire our border control agents, right? They want to sanctuary. By the way, is Chicago a sanctuary city yet? Or
yes, oh, yeah. Well, we're a sanctuary. City?
Oh, you're a
county and state. Yeah, we got it all.
We got the threefer. We got the trifecta.
We got the whole 9 years. So, you know, they want sanctuary cities, sanctuary states. They want to get rid of the border control. They want catch and release. They just want to say anybody who wants to come in can come in. Well, that's a position that's probably, you know, probably has the approval of about 6% of Americans. Americans do want this wall built. This was Trump. You know, I went to the rallies, Dan. I mean, there were two things that American people wanted, right? Build the wall and lock her up.
So I
would make the case that Donald Trump has a voter mandate to build that wall. And if it takes shutting down the government to do it, you know, and I'm disagreeing, I guess, with the Wall Street Journal, who came out on the other side on this, do it. Do it.
He is Steve Moore, Wall Street Journal columnist for now and chief economist for CNN. Steve, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
All right. Have a great week, guys. Bye.
And he joined us on our Turnkey Depro Answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM560 The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. So, again, over the weekend, plan advanced to reform the Chicago Police Department, turn it more into sort of a college campus, you know, focused on form over substance.
Black Lives Matter groups over Chicago Police, right?
Yeah. Sure, you want to
take into account their opinion before you take into the people that you've hired.
Pigs in a blanket, fry them like bacon. Let's explore that. What did you feel? What are you trying to convey when you say that? How can we translate that into public policy or department procedure? Sure. The highlights from the reform plan advanced by Tiny Dancer and Attorney General Fivehead include, but not limited to, investigate anonymous complaints against officers.
Yeah.
Okay. You're going to need to hire more
with danger.
You're going to need to hire more investigators, because that's about the only thing you'll be able to do if you can just file an anonymous complaint against any cop who rubs you the wrong way for any reason. Require the department to track foot pursuits.
No idea what that means.
No, they have body cameras, so that it's like tracking.
It's
the tracking is attendant to the job. But maybe there'll be more detail that Kevin Graham can help us with. Limit the use of tasers.
And do what? Use your words instead?
Yeah, exactly. Why does it always have to be violence? Why don't you just use your words to achieve, you know, a better sense of brotherhood. Okay. Yeah. Somebody's pointing a gun
can
at you.
Can you put that gun
down?
Yeah,
please. Please.
I'm not feeling safe right now.
Please put that gun down. Safe spaces for Chicago police officers. Require police use terms appropriate to a person's gender identity.
Now this is just getting silly.
Sir, we're going to get to the robbery in progress. But first, how should I refer to you?
Are you a he or a she?
I mean, I don't want to, you know,
I don't want to
be out of bounds here.
Yeah.
So those are the highlights. 5,000, round numbers, 5,000 murdered, 20,000 shot in Tiny Dancer's 7 years as mayor. And this is what they've come up with. Remember, the Department of Justice, Loretta Lynch, when she came to town, had that presser with Tiny Dancer and everybody. Systemically racist organization. That was the conclusion. 12,000 plus officers, approximately half of whom are minority, are all white supremacists. Now, to be fair, that was just a cut and paste from their report on Ferguson, their report on Baltimore, their report on every police department. How's this going to shake out when it comes to what the public is actually concerned about, which is their peaceful coexistence, peace in their neighborhoods? And also, I think there's a lot of concern about the safety of police officers, too. Kevin Graham, president of the Chicago Fraternal Order of Police, joins us now. Kevin, thanks for being with us again. Appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks. You know, after that intro, I don't know why you need me on. I think you've got a pretty good sum of what's going on in the consent decree.
Okay. Well, all right. Well, is there anything redeeming about it from your perspective and your membership's perspective, obviously?
Well, you know, the things that are good in there could be done on their own. They don't need a consent decree. One of the things is that they are going to expand employee assistance and hire more clinicians. You know, many of our officers go through traumatic incidents almost on a daily basis, and often they need to go to employee assistance where we have counselors to walk them through that so they don't suffer PTSD. I can't begin to tell you some of the traumatic things that I've seen over my 35 years of being a police officer. And so I think that is a step in the right direction. But most of what's in there is to pacify, for lack of a better term, the progressives in the city who believe that that the police are the problem. Not that when police give lawful commands to drop the weapon, and they refuse to do so, give lawful commands to stop running, and they refuse to do so, somehow it's not the fault of the criminal, it's the fault of the police. And that's what a lot of these reforms in this consent decree are trying to address, trying to correct the police and not the public.
Well, it's silly at times when you have to require terms of how to properly address someone, he or she. I mean, does that seem like the most egregious part of this consent decree?
Well, actually, some of the things that I find worse than that are certainly doing away with signed affidavits. I mean, I think it's a common
for the complaints
practice to face your accusers in this country. And so, you know, if somebody's going to make a statement, if somebody's going to say that the police did something, then that's fine. If we have bad police officers, we can get rid of them. And certainly there has been no shyness on the part of the public to make accusations, even when they're wrong, about the police. So we want to make sure that we can defend ourselves and go after the people who do make false allegations. But getting back to your original statement about addressing somebody as ma'am or sir, you know, I worked in the 19th District. I worked over around Addison and Halstead, and I don't know how you would determine that just by looking at somebody as to who you are going to address into what gender. Certainly if they say, I'd rather be addressed as something, that's fine. No problem with that. But to simply to try and spend time to decipher what gender somebody is or how they want to be addressed is ridiculous.
Yeah. All right, so I'm not going to ask you.
Yeah. Put your hands up.
I should have asked. Per the new protocol, Kevin, is it okay if I refer to you by your
sir,
as cisgender sir, Mr. Graham? Is that okay if I don't?
As I said, I've been a policeman a long time. I've
never had that question
in the book, but
never had that question, huh?
Kevin or sir is just fine.
Yeah, I think the mustache is a bit of a giveaway.
It can be.
The real question I think a lot of people have in Chicago is, so then how does this impact, if this were to be ratified, how will this impact how police do their job or not do their job? In other words, you know, the impact of police officers not feeling like they have the backing of the civilian political authorities, not feeling like they can do things that allow them to keep themselves and each other safe on the streets.
Well, first of all, I think we just need to go back a few years when the ACLU wanted to expand the stop card and put in discipline to officers should they fill out the cards incorrectly or the paperwork incorrectly. We dramatically stopped going out and stopping people, because who wants to be suspended or disciplined simply because we fill out a three-page paperwork incorrectly and make a legitimate mistake? And that became encumbersome upon the police, and so we only stop it when it's absolutely necessary. And going up to people who are hanging out on the street corner, which we used to do regularly, we don't do anymore, and that's part of the problem. So when the ACLU gets involved and tries to think that they are going to correct an idea that the police are doing something wrong, it leads to a chilling effect, and the crime has gone up ever since. So if this consent decree goes into effect, the city will become far less safe than it already is.
Why was there a need to limit the use of tasers? Is that a systemic problem there in the department, or what does that mean?
I am unaware that there is a systematic problem with tasers. They brought the tasers in because when we had an incident where we called for a taser and there wasn't any available, there was no sergeant available, and it led to consequences that political leaders felt were incorrect. They decided to buy more tasers, spend millions of dollars on tasers, putting them out there. Now they're worried that we're using the tasers too much. I think they need to decide what it is they're planning on doing. I mean, certainly they're sending inconsistent messages to the members.
Yeah, I'd definitely be an advocate for continuing to buy millions of dollars in tasers. I've got some stock in a taser company. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So here's the thing. Why don't you just beat them to the punch and suggest that we disarm the police? They just go around in like a mall security, like Paul Blart mall security uniforms, and politely ask people to stop killing one another.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to work, and I am a little concerned about the safety of my members. So I think I'm going to take a pass on that.
Not
going to
go that direction.
And I think instead we're just going to fight the Attorney General in court on the consent decree, which is what we are doing now. I do believe we will be successful, and I have some very good attorneys working on it, and I think we're going to do fine when we get in front of Judge Dow.
The trust issue, though, too, on a serious note. So I'm talking to a friend of mine who's an African-American gentleman yesterday about that shooting in South Shore. And, you know, we both watched the same videotape. And he says that the reason the guy was spinning away is cops opened fire on him before he spun away. You know, he was handing his wallet or his ID over, and then somebody came up behind him and they shot him before he ever went for his gun. And there's no evidence of that on the video, but I think it speaks.
It's just not true.
I suspect it's not true. It doesn't make any sense, but it does speak to the lack of trust. And this is a sophisticated, smart guy, but it speaks to the mistrust that exists between the Black community, in particular, Latino community to some extent, too, and the Chicago Police Department. Now, some of that, of course, has been media and politician generated, but it doesn't matter. It's still real. And even though, by the way, public polling, the Chicago Police Department has a much higher standing in the minds of Chicago residents than does, say, CPS, just point of order. But there's still a real problem in the neighborhoods that your men and women have to police, and trust is a big factor there. Are there things that FOP is advocating or suggesting to the politicians that CPD and to CPD brass that CPD should do to try and address that problem?
You know, over a year ago, I met with the superintendent, and one of the things I suggested was that oftentimes on Sunday mornings, it's one of our slower times during the week, and that my suggestion was that officers stop in places of worship so they see officers in a different context, that we are all there to support each other's faith and to reassure them that we're there to protect them. Yet I've seen nothing come out about that. That is one way that doesn't cost us anything, that I think connects with the community, and that is just one of several things that I would be suggesting, should I be asked. But, of course, the Attorney General's people, when the only thing that we really were discussing was about our contract, and then when and certainly we made suggestions, but there was no feedback from them, it certainly is disheartening that they go and talk to everybody and get their input except us and how to actually do this, to reform, if reform is needed in the Chicago Police Department. And I'm a little skeptical on some things. Yes, we do need to make some changes, certainly in promotions, certainly in the number of officers we have out there. But one of the things that is not addressed, which is one of the biggest problems in the department, is officers to get time off. Not one word is mentioned in that consent decree. Hmm. And they need to hire more police officers. We need to have time off. You know, this weekend, a lot of people's days off are canceled. They've been waiting and waiting and waiting for a weekend off with their families.
Oh, yeah. Lollapalooza.
Canceled. Yeah. Amy and Oliver.
Lollapalooza, and then we have the Aaron Water Show, yeah. And then that whole Dan Ryan shutdown, that price tag was $323,000.
Well, we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow by Wrigley Field.
Yeah, the Lakeshore, right, Greg Livingston and his crew.
They've been advocating that we need to be locking these people up. If they want, it's one thing to make a statement. It's another thing to deliberately try and disrupt other people's lives because your message is more important than what they want to do. And so my suggestion has been to lock everybody up. And then you won't have that problem, because once you start locking people up, they'll get the message that they're going to go to jail and they're going to spend some time in jail. They're going to have to come up with a bond, and they may think twice about it next time.
Well, if you see a tall blonde with a bunch of aging Linkin Park Trixies making a scene at Lollapalooza, just put them in the cage. All right.
Well, I was more referring to the protest.
Oh, yeah. Oh, sure. Of course. Yeah, of course. The protest. Yeah. Kevin,
But certainly, you know, we want people to come to Chicago and have a good time. We just want them to be safe. It is the job of every Chicago police officer to look out for the well-being of people. And that seems to be lacking in this consent decree, the realization of how hard we work every day and night, and that our officers put their lives on the line. They make sure that they are doing everything they can to make their communities safer. And that seems to be lacking, and the message isn't getting out there on that.
He is Kevin Graham. He is the president of the Chicago Fraternal Order of Police. Kevin, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Take care.
Have a good day.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Spalding's got a new ad.
He sure does, and it involves Madigan and puppies, and just listen, if it's effective.
Mike Madigan hates puppies. Mike Madigan hates sunshine. J.B. Pritzker and Mike Madigan are Democrats, so J.B. Pritzker must hate puppies and sunshine.
It's ridiculous. Bruce Rauner is a failure, and he blames everyone but himself. As a businessman, I've helped create thousands of jobs by bringing people together to solve problems and get results. And that's what I'll do as governor. And for the record, I love puppies.
And then he's licking. He's letting this puppy. He's almost making out with this
dog. I don't. That's J.B. Pritzker. That's actual sound of J.B. Pritzker. I think it's eating fudge. I think J.B. Pritzker eating fudge. He makes different sounds depending on the meal. Now, I don't know what happened after that commercial, but if you watch it closely at the end, you see him putting mustard on that dog.
Little pup. Little golden retriever pup didn't stand a chance.
Yeah.
Get in my belly.
Yeah. Although, I'll tell you what, you know, when you, everybody that is against you, is just a toady of Mike Madigan.
Uh-huh.
I mean, Pritzker is aligned with Madigan. There's no question about it.
Of course he is. Didn't he hired him to reduce his property taxes? That's kind of
bad. Yeah.
A lot of people do, I guess, apparently, people with power.
But the problem is Ronner, former Governor Ronner, is the boy who cried wolf. Jeanne Ives is Mike Madigan's favorite Republican, right?
Oh, that's right.
Everybody is a toady of Mike Madigan if you're not on board for abortion on demand and junk science on gender and tax increases and the ERA and every other
sanctuary state,
every other surrender that Ronner and Ronner Republicans have made to those same Mike Madigan toadies that they like to decry now in commercials. It's not that he's wrong about J.B. Pritzker. It's that he has no credibility on the topic. That's his problem. That's why he's going to get pounded.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. See Sean Spicer in Chicago on August 8th. Tickets are absolutely free. Get yours at 560theanswer.com/briefing.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. So this hairstylist in D.C., right, that founded the walkaway movement, Straka, is his name, Brandon Straka. This spawned all kinds of people sharing their stories, whether in written form or videos posted online, why they left the Democrat Party. Brandon Straka, former liberal, explains why he left the Democrat Party. I thought, well, do we have local stories too? We can tell. You would think in a state where 85% of people think Illinois is on the wrong track, and yet Chicago Democrats have controlled the city for 100 years and the state for 50 years, more or less, have controlled, that there would be walkaway stories, that people sick of the same power structure and maybe willing to speak out. One such gentleman is Lex Anderson, who is a Hyde Park native, Kenwood High School grad, Kenwood Academy, Morehouse nice. College grad,
ooh,
African-American gentleman who has left the Chicago Democrat Party. Pourquoi?
Dime por qué.
We're pleased to be joined by Lex Anderson. Now, Lex, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
Hello, Dan. How are you?
Good.
How are you, everyone?
Good. So why did you leave the sweet nectar offered by the Chicago Democrats?
Well, just to give you a little background, I am a Chicago native, born and bred, but I also was heavily involved in politics based on my family and family's involvement with Harold Washington, who my aunt was a secretary for him, and at a young age I was canvassing and going out and handing out flyers, and that really prompted me to want to be in politics. From that point on, attending Morehouse, afterwards, I won't name any names, but I was fortunate enough to get a paying job on the Hill for a Democratic congressman from Chicago. Also worked for TWO, community organizing, as well as automatic aid in the 20th Ward. So I've been totally involved in the trenches of the Democratic Party because that's what I was told to do. So from an African-American standpoint, traditionally that's what we do, is we pull the trigger as Democrats. Well, looking at the conditions of, I grew up in Hyde Park and it was a great experience, but the bordering communities were struggling and they were all under Democratic rule and nothing has changed from 1968 as far as housing, unemployment and incarceration has increased tremendously, and all these conditions that are undesirable are under Democratic rule. And I just said that enough is enough, and I'm really just want to make an exodus from this party. And I don't see a Republican in sight within any of my communities that are struggling. I believe that one party doesn't want you and the other one doesn't need you. And it's just, I don't want my agenda to be dictated to me. So
I'm a former recovering Democrat myself. And
okay.
How is your
media
family,
elite?
Yeah. How is your family and friends? What's been their reaction to you leaving the party?
Well, you know, when you are systematically forced into a belief, which is considered brainwashing, it's very hard to diffuse that ideology. So my family supports me in whatever decision I make. Friends who I feel are, who I thought are somewhat, you know, educated and aware, are definitely not a fan of my beliefs and what I am talking about when it comes to the Democratic Party.
What do you think the mental block is in terms of, like, you know, what you're articulating in terms of why you left the Democrat Party, even though, you know, you're making it clear it's not like you're running to the Republican Party any more than they've run to you, I suppose. But what is it for those in your social circle, familial circle? What is it that prevents them from saying, well, yeah, you're right. I mean, that is the reality on the ground, and these are the people who've been in charge, so maybe we should hold them accountable. That doesn't seem to me to be an unreasonable position.
Well, when you create, I mean, my issue is not what the Democratic Party hasn't done for me, but what they've done to me.
Yeah, right.
Done to the community.
Right.
Okay, so when you create a deficit and you create challenges only to ration out resolutions at a very minimal aspect, then, you know, it's just chasing a dream. And I think people do not realize that, you know, that the Democratic Party has created a deficit for Black people. And when I say that, I totally get attacked. And just to be clear, I have not ran to the Republican Party. I'm a libertarian.
Okay.
Yeah. So you know, so I believe in the third party, and I believe by addition by subtraction is the result. And when you see an exodus of the Democratic Party to whatever party, a third party, Green Party, whatever you choose, then you're going to see some results, because we know that, you know, votes and it is the profit margin for any party.
And so, you think it, I mean, with respect to people that are resistant to your arguments, do you think it just comes down to something you sort of insinuated earlier, where you talked about one party doesn't want me? I assume you're talking about the Republican Party. And so is it that feeling in within your social circles, within Black neighborhoods, that the Republican Party doesn't want me, so I'm not even willing to entertain the conversation because I know they don't like me? They've bought that line from the Democrats that Republicans don't like Black people, basically.
Right. Well, let's be honest. From an African-American standpoint, both parties have exhibited racist acts, you know. So, you know, so that's what both parties play on as far as an agenda, as far as racism is concerned. And that's the focus. But the Democratic Party, it has shifted their agenda when it comes to black people and African-American people. They have kind of gone to another format as far as immigration, the LGBT community. And since the, you know, the Civil Rights Act, there hasn't really been much done as far as social equality when it comes to the, you know, black people. So they play on the race card and play on, you know, and we know it exists, but I'm really focused more on where is our equality for education or economic development, and really being able to, or prison reform, you know. So that's my focus, and that is not addressed by the Democratic Party.
You mentioned earlier, you just said that both parties have done acts of racism, or maybe I'm putting that the wrong way. What has the Republican Party done?
Let's just say as a whole, the judicial system, not having equal opportunity. And what I don't understand is that I pay the same amount of taxes on the South Side as someone in, I don't know, Wicker Park or Lincoln Park has paid, but the disparity of education is different. And
right.
The only thing I hear is resources. Well, that doesn't make sense to me. You know, so does that mean you have a shinier book or a better computer? What are the resources? No, it's the curriculum. It's what's handed down. And that's systematic racism to me, or not having the opportunity to, you know, participate in the procurement process in Illinois as a business owner. You know, that those are systematic racist things to me that both parties indulge in. So, you know, that's just the you know, pure fact. And you can't get around that.
Do you think younger black men and women, black men and women in their 30s and 40s, are more open to an alternative to the Democratic Party, more likely to hashtag walk away as al-Quarant, than older generations of black men and women?
Absolutely. There's an underlying current of people who are fed up and, you know, upset, and, you know, and it's only so long that before you just can walk outside of your door and you see there's not a change and things aren't getting better. In fact, they're getting worse. So, yeah, you have to eventually wake up to the situation. And, you know, I just want to talk about, you know, like the actual systematic brainwashing. I mean, the standing governor himself, you know, proposed a bill for criminal justice sentencing reform, and the black caucus blocked it because they didn't want to support a standing governor that was a Republican. Now, I don't support the standing governor. I, in fact, support Cass Jackson, who is
a libertarian candidate.
The libertarian.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and the reason why I do is because they didn't reach out to me. I reached out to them. And within a week of the party, the man was at my house, and we actually went to support a gentleman who has been on house arrest for 2.5 years for a suspended license. And without media, without his aides, just him and I went, and he went to observe the judge's behavior, who happened to be a Democratic judge and a black woman. And 1 or 3 years, he's going to be on house arrest for a suspended license. So he's not even getting due process. He's not getting a fit. And so that's real action to me. That's real, you know, showing up for the community. And people are giving the Libertarian Party a bad rap because, you know, I'm getting flack from my friends saying, "Are you with an alt-right party?" No, alt-right isn't going to show up to your house. They're not coming to the black community. They don't even approach African Americans. So that was liberating to me. I feel somewhat of some type of independence just leaving the Democratic Party and joining the Libertarian Party.
All right. He is Lex Anderson. He walked away, hashtag walk away, from Chicago Democrat Party to the Libertarian Party. Lex, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate you telling your story.
All right, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
This is The Morning Show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Oh, yeah.
Did you see Fantasy Island movie?
Yeah, I can't wait. Who's going to play Tattoo? Oh, maybe Rahm Emanuel.
Dinklage as Rahm Emanuel. Playing Hervé Villechaize in the Fantasy Island movie.
That is great.
How about it? Also, this, a little offended you didn't remark upon my new threads.
Well, yeah, your ostrich jacket it's striking.
It's custom. I shop at the same place Paul Manafort does.
Yeah, apparently he spent $15,000 on an ostrich jacket. He had very nice taste.
If only he would have paid taxes on $60 million he made working for Yurchenko in the Ukraine.
Trump's name never came up yesterday in the opening statements.
Nor will it.
Nor will, because they have nothing to do with each other, except for that brief time in history.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.